just makes a divorce so much worse. But when it comes time to stray and have an affair, that is something that only the person who had the affair chose to do.
I do agree. It's, you don't slip and fall in and accidentally have an affair.
So if it takes two, then it means that because I was pregnant and because I was incapacitated post-delivery and trying to recover and heal, that was my contribution to my husband stepping out and getting his needs met somewhere else, right?
Yeah, and that's not. I mean, I agree with you. That's not the case.
Right.
I agree. It's more nuanced. You're absolutely right. You had no part in him and no fault and no blame in him doing what he did.
We have, you know, a hedonistic adaptation, which is we adapt to what is new. We get the Lamborghini and we're like, it's so much fun. But then we're like, but it's not a new Lamborghini anymore. And so it almost doesn't matter how good you have it. Sometimes we adapt to that. We just naturally do. So you could be in a wonderful, loving relationship, and many people I work with are, and yet there is a new gaze that meets you over the conference table, and they linger just a little bit long.
The information shared in this podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. It should not be considered as professional legal advice or a substitute for seeking professional legal advice. I'm Michelle Locke, and this is Love, Lust, Law. Infidelity can turn your world upside down, and today's guest, Lauren LaRusso, understands the reality both personally and professionally. As a psychotherapist specializing in extramarital affairs, she's helped countless individuals and couples navigate betrayal, rebuild clarity, and find a path forward. Blending lived experience with clinical expertise, Lauren offers compassionate, judgment-free guidance for anyone trying to heal, grow, and decide what comes next after an affair. Lauren's expertise has been featured across major media platforms, including the New York Post, Men's Health, Psychology Today, and the Daily Mail. She also has appeared on leading podcasts such as Death, Sex, and Money, Rock Bottom with Ned Fulmer, Divorce Redefined, and many more, becoming a trusted voice in conversations about relationships, healing, and infidelity. Welcome, Lauren. I got to tell you, we are so excited to have you on Love, Lust, Law podcast. Your experience and knowledge and your book are just amazing. I'm totally a fangirl. I follow all of your stuff because I just think the way you talk about affairs and infidelity is, I think, so honest and accurate. And I don't think it's a topic that people cover in the way that you do. And so I absolutely love your content and love following you and could not be happier that you're here today.
Thank you so much. All of that is the highest compliment. Thanks.
So why don't you, for my audience that doesn't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I've been a psychotherapist in private practice for about 14, 15 years. I was, you know, doing general private practice work. And in 2018, I discovered that my now ex-husband was having an affair. And affairs take different shapes. This one was pretty deep and wide, and it blew my life apart instantly. But the question became, you know, what now, right? We had a young daughter at home at the time. He had just started his career that I'd been supporting him through the training for. And affairs are that deal breaker. But when you're in it, now you really are faced with a decision to either make something of the crisis or part ways. So that essentially started me on this huge learning trajectory of learning everything I could about infidelity, why it happens, how it happens, the different types of personality styles or characteristics or patterns of behavior underneath it that lead to it, that support it during it, that the person's dealing with afterwards. I just wanted to know what I was dealing with. And that's that therapist in me who wants to learn as much as I can in order to understand what I'm doing before I can really work with it properly. And so that actually led me to where I am today. So our marriage did not stay intact. We did end up going through a pretty difficult divorce process. And I sort of was just surviving during that time, as most people are. And once I got out and I had a few years of stability of rebuilding my life under my belt, What I started to notice in my private practice was that everything that I had learned in order to bring myself through that crisis of surviving this trauma and grief and change was changing my clients' lives exponentially. And I knew that there was this void in the space of infidelity because it's so commonly experienced, but not properly supported. And I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And I just took to Instagram and started talking about it. And the response was very swift and overwhelmingly necessary. And here I am now.
Affairs are such a hot button topic because people have such strong opinions on them one way or the other, for good or for bad, right? Everyone's got an opinion on it. And I love, and that's one of the reasons why I had Gabby reach out to you, because it is so refreshing to have someone talk so honestly about the dynamics that go into it and the personalities involved and what it takes to rebuild and remake a relationship if you can, and or know when you're out. Also, I know you've got followers that are the affair partner. And they're looking to you to go, is this real? Is he or she going to leave their spouse for me? Your audience isn't just marriages or isn't just couples. I can assure you that you get messages from affair partners.
I do that on purpose because All sides need to understand all sides in order to have a healthy approach to how to deal with it and have empathy and understanding. And it enhances each person's experience and ability to move through it when they have a scope that's not only their own. And so there's a lot of power in that knowledge. And yeah, a lot of affair partners are on my page and clients. Love me, my affair partners. I really, really do. I empathize a lot with that situation. If I were to say anything to that, an affair just makes a divorce so much worse. The ending of a marriage is traumatic in and of itself, but the affair just turns everything. It just disintegrates all ability to have decency, communication, trust. It leads people to just be self-protective, secretive, angry, vengeful. It brings out the worst in everybody. And I think that, you know, it's obviously never going anywhere. But if I could say anything, it's like, don't have an affair, because it just literally adds more problems, more chaos, more trauma than what you already would be dealing with if you chose to confront any issues that are present in your relationship. Easier said than done, but that would be my high level advice.
There's a void in talking about the realities of affairs and why they happen. You know, what I really want to dive in about it is, from my perspective, is that affairs happen quite often in my practice. I mean, in my practice, it's he or she cheated, and there's different levels of cheating. And that sounds terrible to say, but there are different levels. There's a serial cheater. That's a whole personality type that you're not, like, just get divorced. There's the one-off. It takes a multitude of avenues affairs can. And I know in my practice, clients come in because adultery is a grounds for divorce in Texas, like most states. And they're like, well, I want my pound of flesh because he cheated. And so from my perspective, from the legal perspective, I'm like, well, we can go to court and ask for what we call a disproportionate division of the marital estate based on the affair. But let's talk about the realities of that. And the realities are the courts are desensitized to it. And I hate to say it doesn't matter. It matters some, and the level of cheating matters a lot to the court, right? But as a general rule, I don't deal with the emotional fallout from it like you do. And you deal with putting their lives back together. And it is just, one, it's a difficult job. I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing you really specialize in that in your practice. Is that what you do now, mostly infidelity work?
All of it. Yeah.
Okay. So have you lost? Because I used to be a domestic violence judge. And so all I handled were cases involving he hit me, he kicked me, he punched me, he choked me, he stalked me, he harassed me. Am I just the ugly of the ugly? Do you think, for example, one of the reasons why I stopped doing it, being a full-time family domestic violence judge, was because you become desensitized to some of what you're hearing, because you're hearing it each and every day, and the cases are ugly and awful, and you deal with it each and every day. Do you find it changing your perspective, like everyone cheats, or it's a subsect of the population? Like, how has just specializing it in it changed your perception on it, or has it?
You know, it doesn't. As a therapist, we're trained to literally just meet clients where they are and take the approach of helping them through their unique situation. And we have a multitude of tools and resources and knowledge bases to help tailor our, you know, our approach to whatever that client's going through. So I would say, you know, it doesn't make me jaded. It doesn't make me desensitized. And it actually makes me hopeful, because I see people who are extraordinarily resilient. I see people who are oftentimes good people who are doing things that are extremely out of character for them. And the percentage of people who are really, really like run, there's a darkness in there that isn't going anywhere, it's a smaller percentage than, you know, than I think people would imagine when it comes to infidelity. Because our culture has the idea that if you cheat, something's wrong with you and you have a personality disorder or some deep character flaw. And the truth is that can be the case, but oftentimes it's about a lot of other things that it's my job to help those people unpack and do something productive with. So I think that productivity standpoint just helps me feel like I'm doing something with it, you know, that's generative.
One of the things I know I talk about in my practice, and I'll let Jake jump in after that, is I often talk about it takes two for an affair to happen. The exception are serial cheaters. So that's a whole different analysis, because I like you, believe there is a small subsect of our population that are just evil. And I agree with you, it's a darkness, and no matter what's going to happen, they're not going to change. And so unhitch yourself as quickly as possible. That being said, when an affair happens, sometimes I tell my clients, I'm like, look, because some of them don't want to get divorced, right? Like, you know, the rule when you get married is, oh, if they cheat, you're done. Once you're in that, that's not necessarily what happens. Like, sometimes there is grace. Sometimes you can rebuild from it and start over. How often do you find in your practice that they are able to rebuild their relationship post-infidelity versus they go their separate ways?
It's really challenging. And yeah, both people have to want that outcome. And so there's a multitude of factors that determine that. But really, both people have to be open and willing to the process. And when there's been an affair, it makes that exponentially harder, because one person has had an extremely divergent experience of their own in which, you know, they've perhaps informed themselves of aspects of the relationship they aren't happy with, or they've experienced something they can never unknow now that maybe isn't even really that reality based. And it can be a hard thing to come back from, not to mention there's trauma, there's grief, there's trust completely decimated. So it's probably the most challenging relational injury that you can try to come back from. But in our practice, we absolutely have worked with couples who they have such a strong foundation of love for each other. And the affair it blows everything apart, but they put it back together with a courageous openness to understanding each other and showing back up for each other and doing the work. And that is hard work. It's like its own full-time job. But I always say divorce is a full-time job. So you can choose your full-time job. You can choose to do the work, or you can choose to divorce. But both are hard. And honestly, it's very individual. But both people have to want to stay together for that to be something that strengthens the couple. And honestly, they have to be willing to individually strengthen themselves in order to create a stronger relationship as well.
Yeah, because they have to look at themselves and figure out what I did wrong, and they have to own it. And accountability, or the ability to take accountability, I think is a dying art in our culture.
Well, it's the most important part of this. And you said it takes two, and I don't agree with that, I have to say. I think that that's a really difficult thing that shames betrayed spouses. And I'm not saying that you're shaming anybody, but it's an idea that's thrown around in the culture that is sometimes true in terms of contribution to the marital experience. But correct. When it comes time to stray and have an affair, that is something that only the person who had the affair chose to do.
Oh, and I agree. They didn't.
I think it's just important to be nuanced about that because, so let's take my experience. For example, I was pregnant and I was giving birth to my daughter and then I was postpartum. So I was recovering, right? And that's an extremely difficult experience for a woman to go through. So if it takes two, then it means that because I was pregnant and because I was incapacitated post delivery and trying to recover and heal, that was my contribution to my husband stepping out and getting his needs met somewhere else, right?
Yeah, that's I mean, I agree with you. That's not the case.
Right.
I agree. It's more nuanced. You're absolutely right. You had no part in him and no fault and no blame in him doing what he did.
A lot of times people are just being people. And that's it goes both ways. So it takes two. And sometimes the person who doesn't have the affair is equally as unmet, unsupported, unhappy in the marriage. They just didn't choose to cope with it or deal with their feelings by stepping out of the relationship. So I think it's really important to say, over here, we've got the affair and we're going to unpack the affair for what it is. And over here, we've got the relationship and there are intersecting parts to it. But the only person who's responsible for the affair itself is the person who had it. And the people who are responsible for the relationship are both people who are in it. And we're going to really look at both of those separately. And then we're going to see where there's any contributing vulnerabilities. If there are some, right, past the point of just being human, right, giving birth, having, you know, ups and downs of mood and stress at work and travel, you know, like life is hard. It leaves us vulnerable at a baseline. And then we add all of these other things about how your marriage should be always wonderful, always, you know, passionate and fabulous. And we're celebrating each other and we're each other's best friend. And in moments when we fall down on that, which is just real, it's like, well, this obviously is wrong. Well, no, you just got to hang in there through the hard times. And obviously, again, this is not for all cases. Some cases are really, there's a personality issue at play. There's a pattern of behavior that's not changing or going anywhere. And that is certainly a different situation. But for most of the couples I see, there's some kind of, you know, crisis that happened in one person that led them to an opportunity that they took to step out of their relationship. And if the betrayed spouse had known just an ounce of that vulnerability, they would have done something about it. Because once they learn about it, when they discover the affair, they double down and they want to do whatever they can to save the relationship. So why can't we front load that process and go to the mat for our marriages before?
Absolutely. I mean, it's, and I guess when I say it takes two, and I think you are absolutely right in the analysis. The affair is a part and separate, and then there's the marriage relationship. I think that's probably a better way that I think I'll probably start talking about it from this point forward, because I do agree. It's, you don't slip and fall in and accidentally have an affair. I mean, that's an intentional act that you do to stray from whatever vows that you had, right? But then there is the relationship problem. And I agree with you. Like, one of the things that I find, at least in my practice, is there's an absolute breakdown in the communication between the spouses. Needs aren't being met. And not needs aren't being met. I mean, there's some people feel lonely, ignored, not respected, not valued. And so they seek sometimes, I don't know that's necessarily intentionally they're seeking it elsewhere, but it ends up seeking it elsewhere, but they seek that validation that they're missing at home elsewhere. And I think it happens to both genders. I mean, because it's not just men that cheat. So Jake, this is not going to be a man bashing session. I think women cheat as well. And are you seeing in your practice, is it more women cheating, more men cheating? Is it about 50-50? Kind of where is it on the percentage breakdown? I'm actually curious about that.
Yeah, percentages are really hard, but I would say in general, men and women are really coming close to each other in those numbers.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, women are more empowered. They have more options. They have more availability. They have more that they want for themselves. There's more autonomy and more, you know, opportunity. And so absolutely, it's coming up equal.
Yeah. I figured as much because just in my practice, it's probably evenly split on who cheats between the genders. I think part of that's a cultural shift. I mean, we've gone from nothing but stay-at-home moms over the, you know, way back when to now we have, like you and I, working independent women that can come and go kind of as we please and can take a girls' weekend somewhere if we want and don't have to get the permission from our husband to go do it. And so there are work trips. There are continuing in our world, legal education hours. So there's seminars we have to go to. I mean, there are so many more opportunities now because women aren't stuck at home. And I guess there's also the perspective of that immediate gratification. Like, am I going to get away with it? Because it's selfishness, right? Like, if your needs aren't getting met, you just decide, I'm going to go do this because I need my needs met. As opposed to reaching out to your partner saying, hey, you know, can we work this through? I mean, I've got cases where the parties haven't had relations for years.
Yeah.
And I don't know how in those particular cases, one party can be surprised that the other party strayed if you haven't had relations. Right. I mean, and that's
the silent death of intimacy.
It is. And I will tell you, I can't tell you how often in cases that is one of the issues, that they haven't had sex in years. I had one case, they hadn't had relations in 20 years.
I believe that. Yeah.
And she complained that he cheated. And my thought was, at some point, I mean, yes, he still did the act. I understand that. But at some point, it's, what did you think was going to happen?
And it is really a breakdown of communication when you go to the source of that, because in an ideal scenario, that spouse would have said, hey, we haven't been intimate in 6 months. I don't want to slide down that slippery slope where we don't know what it is to be together and we don't know each other anymore. What can we do to stoke this fire? Or how are you feeling about your body or sex? Or are you feeling overwhelmed by the children's needs and touched out? And like, let's have more dialogue instead of just being like, well, I guess this is just the way that it is. And it's so easy to do that because we are more stressed than ever in today's society. And we're like, honestly, dealing with my relationship is like, it's just one more thing. I want to sort of take that piece for granted. And I want to focus on everything else that I need to do to survive. And then there's a vulnerability that creeps in. And it's only then where you're like, whoa, wake up call. So we see that a lot. But also a lot of affairs don't happen at all because of vulnerabilities in the relationship. They often happen because it's just new. We have, you know, a hedonistic adaptation, which is we adapt to what is new. We get the Lamborghini and we're like, it's so much fun. But then we're like, but it's not a new Lamborghini anymore. And so it almost doesn't matter how good you have it. Sometimes we adapt to that. We just naturally do. So you could be in a wonderful, loving relationship, and many people I work with are, and yet there is a new gaze that meets you over the conference table and they linger just a little bit long. And that's interesting. And maybe they're seeing me in a way I haven't been seen in a while, not for any reason of my spouse's, but because that's just a long-term relationship.
Correct.
Right? So now I'm just experiencing something new and that flutter that comes up in me, or that I don't think I want to turn away from this because this is interesting. That's a whole nother beast. And oftentimes that honestly is the cause, because we don't live in a bell jar and we interact with other people who are hot or interesting or see us as hot or interesting. And we sometimes want to follow that line.
Well, yeah, because it sure is nice to feel desired and wanted. I mean, when you get in this, if you're in the same relationship for 22 years, it's like, all right, really? I mean, you have to fight to keep the excitement. And if you don't, marriage is tough. Like, for anyone that says it's, you know, it's what we were raised to believe, it's that you find your prince charming and you marry and you're happily ever after and you've got the white picket fences and the house and the 2.5 kids and the two dogs and the cat and the partridge in the pear tree, right? Like, you are, like, that is the fantasy that we are raised to believe is what happens when you get married, as opposed to the realities of, like, they won't stop snoring.
It's not sexy.
It's not.
Someone being a human being, and like, should they be faulted for literally being themselves? No, but that becomes very unattractive, very uninteresting. Humans are messy. Humans are needy. Humans are gross. We get sick. We're, you know, like it. And then you see somebody who you don't know that all about yet.
Right. You know, you see the shiny new.
Yeah.
And they're on their best behavior. And it's like, ooh, this will be fun. And then you realize, and I do say this to my clients, is you can change spouses. But you're going to find out that you're going to wake up to the same problems, just with a different body.
It's true. As I always say, wherever you go, there you are. And what I find is that people who have affairs, they are more susceptible to believing that the problem lies in their relationship. And that may be true. But what they fail to take the time to examine are the patterns in themselves, which we all have, our own patterns of relationship, of attachment, of how we dance the dance, how we deal. You're bringing that with you. And so you risk robbing yourself of the awareness of that. And then it's going to come back up in your next relationship, because it just is. And you're going to have to deal with it there. And sometimes if that relationship is more, your nervous systems are more aligned, it's more safe to communicate, it's more mutual, you can tackle those issues with more generativity than you maybe could have in your marriage or your past relationship. But you still have to do it. You still have to do your work.
I don't think my father, when he was married to my mother, ever kept it in his pants. Like, I think the first affair my mom found out about was when my brother was 5 months old. And I remember the fights as a kid. They were divorced when I was in second grade, so I was seven. And my mom was begging my dad not to leave, because whatever girl he was sleeping with was in a car outside our house to come pick him up. I mean, there is that level of cheating that you just can't do anything about. And that is clearly a personality disorder. I mean, if you were doing the affair that blatant in front of your spouse that has two young children, like, get whoever, if you're that spouse, get out. It's not getting any better ever.
Yeah.
How do you define an affair?
Oh, so I'm going to pull the lawyer answer first. The lawyer answer is, it is defined by statute, and it is if you have sexual relations with a intimate partner, right? So whatever those intimate relations are, in my opinion, I'm going to go back to the bases. Like, when we were in school, we had first base, second base, third base, home run, right? Anything first base is physical cheating beyond anything. I mean, you shouldn't be kissing someone else that's not your partner. You shouldn't be holding hands with someone that's not your partner. Now, holding hands isn't a sexual relation as defined under the code, but I can't imagine a single spouse that would say, yeah, it's okay for my significant other to hold hands with someone else. Like, it's not technically cheating as defined by statute, but I kind of like what Lauren said. It's the gut check. Like, if you are sending something or engaging in something that you know would upset your partner, and a reasonable upset, not if they're like partners that get upset for stupid stuff, but like, you know, if you're sending it, oh yeah, hey, I liked you in those jeans today. Not something you would be okay with if your partner did. So why is it okay for you to do it, right? Like, I always do the what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And if it's not appropriate behavior for one, it's not appropriate behavior for the other one. But also, it's really the gut check. It's if I had, and I go back to my mother, Meemaw. If Meemaw saw this message, what would she think about my communications with someone? And my mother, God bless her, but she is so passive aggressive and I love her. But I know if I'm sending a message, I'm like, oh, my mother wouldn't like this. I probably shouldn't send it. But I'm divorced, so now I can send whatever I want. But there's like a gut check. So there's the legal definition, and then there's the reality of relationships. And each relationship also is very different. What is cheating to one couple may not be cheating to another couple. For example, and this is one that comes up and got so much dialogue online, was watching porn. Some people believe that watching porn is cheating. I think it's situational. I don't think watching porn in and of itself is cheating. I think if it comes to the point where it is taking away from your spousal relationship obligations, then maybe it crosses that boundary. But I think as a general rule, it's not cheating. But Also, cheating is also defined by the relationship itself and what is okay in a relationship versus not. Other example I can give are there are open relationships. I've had divorces with open relationship couples. And then what happens is one of them violates the set of boundaries that exist for these open relationships. And then it turns into, because they violate those boundaries, and it's an affair. Now, I have a hard time going into court and arguing, hey, judge, they had an affair if they had an open relationship all along. Like, I'm going to have a real hard time making that adultery argument in court. But like I said, so it is very much defined relationship-wise, I think, by each and every couple and the boundaries they set and what they have their expectations are for being faithful or not. The legal definition is something entirely different. But Lauren, I'm curious to your thoughts.
Yeah, it's interesting that the legal definition has to do with physical contact. Because as we know, the emotional aspect is not only where it usually starts, but it is actually the more devastating one. And there's no hierarchy, right? It's all devastating, and it's also in the eye of the beholder.
I'm going to grab my family coke, so I actually want to read the definition of it.
Okay. When it comes to affairs, a combined type emotional affair it's so lethal. But for me, the definition has to do with those gut checks around chemistry, secrecy. Like, secrecy has to be the overarching part of all of it, but chemistry and interest, right? But that secrecy, that is when people discover infidelity in their relationships, it is less about what happened and it is more about the secrecy as the violation. And so I think that secrecy has to be at the forefront of what constitutes infidelity.
I've known people who have had affairs based on exactly what you're talking about, wanting to avoid uncomfortable work within the relationship, uncomfortable conversations, uncomfortable situations. So the easiest way out of that relationship is to cheat.
Well, 100%, right? And so I think almost if you took everything we're talking about and we put an umbrella over it, there would be conflict avoidance underneath all of it, because 9.999 times out of 10, the affair is the place in the relationship where the issues finally are brought to the mat, not before that. It's like the thing that blows everything apart. And now we're finally dealing, which is why affairs tend to lead to more acrimonious divorces. And you guys could speak more to this than I can. But it's like, well, it would have been nice if I knew any of that, right? Or it would have been nice if we had talked about this, 5 years ago. But did you ever bring that up to me? No. And so now we're dealing with loss of literally everything that we've built in our life, including the interpersonal part, which is trust and fidelity and attachment and bonding and all of those things that, make us a family unit, a couple unit. Those things are very important to our survival, actually, as humans. And an affair blows that all apart without going to the mat around it. Now, if you've gone to the mat around your marriage, like really gone to the mat, and it was like trying and honesty and push and pull and give and attempts, and then you had an affair, I would like to meet those people.
You're like, you're not going to find them.
I would like to see them.
Do you know how many couples it takes something like an affair for them to seek out therapy? It takes some sort of let's say financial issue or crime within the relationship, or something that, as you said, blows everything up. Every uncomfortable moment or conversation they've ever wanted to have is now at the forefront.
Yes. It's like, why we just tuck things in and we don't really want to deal with it unless it's absolutely critical. And part of that is our human nature to move away from discomfort. As just natural. It's like, if it's not broke, why are we trying to fix it? So we wait until it is broke. But then when it's broke, we've got a lot more issues to deal with.
I wanted to read the Texas definition of adultery so that, because you were right, it is absolutely, well, it in Texas is physical cheating. So adultery is defined as the voluntary sexual intercourse of a married person with one who is not the spouse of the offender. Man, incredible, right? Because cheating is so much more nuanced than that. But no, Texas law requires it to be sexual intercourse.
Which has to be proven?
Proven. Correct.
Good.
Has to be proven by, now you can prove it through circumstantial evidence. But a mere suggestion and innuendo are insufficient as a matter of law. So you actually have to have some kind of like concrete proof that the person had an affair, physical, sexual, not just held hands or sent some inappropriate text messages, which to me is crazy that it has to be sex.
That's really fascinating. And then it makes me wonder, I'm curious. So I thought that most states, if not all, were no fault anyway at this point. And then that brings up your other point, which you talked about earlier, which is affairs really don't matter as much as we feel they should when we're the scoring party. The court's like, I don't know who drew first blood in this relationship. Maybe the affair was the final death blow to a miserable coexistence. That's not for me to figure out. So we're just going to divide things up and whatever, you know. And so it's sort of like the affair tends to be this whole distraction, this whole like World War III situation. But when it comes to the law and getting a divorce, I mean, I think you could just divorce your spouse. And I'm pretty sure, at least also in my experience, the affair just doesn't end up mattering.
It doesn't. So when we are pleading cases, and because you have to allege fault grounds in your initial petition for divorce. So Texas is a no-fault state. Ironically enough, there have been attempts every legislative session to try and remove no-fault grounds in Texas for divorce, which I think is, it's a whole other ball of wax. That being said, we almost always plead no fault. That is our go-to on about every case. Now, if I've got cases where there has been adultery, what I will do is in my pleadings put, and we reserve the right to amend to add additional grounds for divorce. And so that's usually the cue to the opposing counsel. Oh, there's something else going on. Sometimes instead of it being an adultery case, we make it a cruelty case because if the behavior of the affair, and this is where we get to the emotional affairs and the cheating that doesn't qualify as sexual intercourse, that's when cruelty can come in because if the behavior is such that it was really cruel to the other spouse, and the court can find fault grounds on that. And the fault grounds matter to some extent to the property distribution. If court finds fault, court can say in Texas, one spouse gets more property than the other spouse because of the fault.
And you have to get all the way to trial for that though, right?
Correct. That's the other problem is you got to go to trial. And I think the statistics are 95% of cases settle. That is not the statistics on my personal docket. I'm in trial more than I want to be, but most of mine involve someone with a personality disorder. Either on one side or both, because those are the ones that end up in court.
Absolutely.
Because they can't be reasonable no matter what. And that goes back to the affairs, the accountability.
I don't judge those who have affairs. I really don't. Okay. But one of the things that has helped me, and I want to know, Lauren, your stance and yours as well, Michelle, is to identify your stance on affairs. What does an affair mean to you? Because I will ask the question eventually, it will come up. Have you ever cheated on a significant other? Or they will ask me. Usually they ask me, to be fair. Women want to know if I've cheated. What I find, though, is that because I have this certain hardline stance, then I'll get maybe sometimes a murky response. Well, we are both kind of going our separate ways. You kind of sense the gray water and the little bit of the murkiness, but I don't judge that. But I have to judge if it's right for me in that moment. If this person is lined up with my own perspective on what an affair means and would they communicate?
I'll let Lauren go first.
It's an awful thing to do. It's a traumatizing choice. But nobody does it thinking about their spouse. They do it thinking about themselves. And at the end of the day, it's one of the most harmful things you can do in a relationship. So no, I don't support it, but I don't judge it because I can't work with it if I'm judging it. I have to take a dispassionate approach. There are some people who literally feel entitled to be unfaithful, like maybe your dad, Michelle, right? Like,
oh, he did.
It's a small percent of the population, and that's usually co-occurring with some kind of personality issue. Mm-hmm. That feels truly like, I don't see the problem with this. But most people who have affairs, they don't agree with it. They would tell you that they don't agree with affairs, but then they have their reasons that they did.
Oh, you justify justification.
Right. And so, you know, it's, you have to have a solid ground within yourself, and you have to keep stoking that fire to keep it burning about how deeply you believe in not doing that. Because I think all of us are capable of transgressing some kind of boundary, even if we don't believe we were capable of it.
I personally, and I've watched many of your videos, and I think you do phenomenal work in terms of helping and healing and just basically breaking down the barriers and make people understand sort of the nucleus of the things that we talk about, and how reacting is something that you should put a lot more thought into when you're approaching things like this and have those uncomfortable situations. I don't believe in cheating. I've never cheated. I will break up before I cheat. And that's led to some very uncomfortable moments in those situations. However, I want to tell you this, is that I have been in situations where I have been probably most likely the recipient of someone else having an emotional affair with me. Okay. Now, these are moments when I just try to be there, try to be the good friend. And then all of a sudden, you kind of sense the fact that it is causing some sort of friction in their relationship. And when I hear these words, how are you still single? Okay.
Oh.
And I can tell you, this is going to sound sad. 4 out of the 5 friends who have said that to me over the past many, many years of my life then ended their long-term relationships.
Not necessarily. Nick, how are you still single? No, but you're so right. It's those words. Because if I was, I would be with you, is the rest of that sentence.
Yep.
Yes. And usually what will happen is they'll try to set me up with somebody. So I tend to be that safe, trusted voice. Those words and those things, I want to know more about what you find, Lauren, to look out for if you are that person. And all of a sudden, because I don't ever want to be a homewrecker. I don't ever want to be somebody who is forcing somebody to make a decision. And I hate to say this, but there have been people who have forced it to the wall when it comes to not having uncomfortable conversations with their spouse or their significant other, but wanting to spend more time with me. And you know what you just talked about, that little spark in the eye, when I see that in reverse and I see it's somebody in a supposedly committed relationship, it concerns me.
Good for you. I love what you just said. It's so important. It's also really important for everyone to see faithful men, right? For us to believe in that. And believe that that exists, because there are many people out there who say all men cheat, and that is not true. And it's not fair. And if it is true, it fucking sucks for the rest of us. Like, why are we even doing any of this? Right. So thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
I love the way you shifted that to what happens when you're on the receiving end of this. You need to turn that person back to their relationship and send them towards counseling. So, and again, and again, and again, right? So you can be supportive, but it sounds like you need to have some serious conversations with your spouse about how you're feeling and let me know how that goes, right? If you want to, right? Or not, because it's none of my fucking business, right? Excuse me. Can I curse on
this? No, I love it. Finally, I got the F word.
That's all we do.
Yeah. When I met my current partner, we've been together for a few years now. He was married. And I was single and I was divorced, and I could see in 5 seconds that he was unhappily married. And I was like, not me, not you. This is not happening. And we became friendly. The first thing I did was say, does your wife know how you feel? And if she doesn't, that's for you to go let her know and go into counseling. So what did he do? He started having conversations at home. He got themselves into couples counseling and individual counseling, and they started going to the mat on their relationship, which is what should have been happening the whole entire time, right? And I said, I don't want to know anything about it. It's none of my business. I know that if you are sharing that with me, it's not for me to know. This, your marriage is not my business. It is la, 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 la. Don't want to hear it, right? I've been the betrayed spouse. Don't. And they went through the process and they ended up getting divorced because they could not meet each other's needs. That is like what should happen.
That's a beautiful case study. And we know how rare that is. Okay. Because you're going to find people that are, you know, both, let's say for lack of a better term, thirsty, both seeking some sort of connection. And I hate to say it like this, but a lot of people, when they see people in a stable relationship, they envy that. They want that. And they're like, well, if that person can be stable with that person, maybe it'll just lightly transfer over to what we're dealing with right now. And this is the problem that I have with cheating, is that you're bringing in that baggage and that instability into a next relationship. That relationship, to me, the odds that someone is going to then trust you because you just got out of an affair is literally going to be decimated. That's my own personal opinion, because I see this too often where people use the same parameters for someone who's having an affair, thinking they're going to then stabilize their home and be on solid ground. That's my personal belief, but I see a problem with that.
We work with affair couples every single day, and the affair itself is the origin of so many problems. It causes more problems than it solves, obviously, but it creates brand new ones that never would have been there before, not only for the married couple, but also for the affair couple who hopes to be together afterwards. It is not recommended. It's just not recommended, which is part of why I was like, nope, you're going to go, whoop, whoop, you're going to go over there.
You take the risk. However, you took a risk. All right. You took a risk. You held up your own end of the integrity, and I commend you for that. But you also sent somebody back in that you did have a connection with, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to be strong enough to do that. And there's not a lot of people, for lack of a better term, are going to throw the fish back in the water.
But that's entirely true, right? So I had done my work. I had gone through the trauma of a divorce. My mantra was, I am not going backwards for anybody or anything. I would rather be alone than be with the wrong person or in the wrong situation, right? That was my mantra. So I was in this really healthy, really stable place. And I'm a betrayed spouse. And I'm a clinician in this area. So it's almost like I always joke the universe put him in my path because he's a really good person. And he could have easily gone down the wrong road if I hadn't been the person he ran into who knew high level how dangerous this really is if you make the wrong choices at this phase. And how important it is to put first things first. You cannot begin another relationship until you deal with and your spouse knows there's a real crisis and their marriage is in jeopardy. Because when we invert that and we start a new relationship, you still then have to go let your spouse know that the marriage is in crisis. And that's when all hell breaks loose. And sometimes that spouse goes to the mat for the relationship and it confuses things even more. And now you've got two relationships that you're trying to maintain. You still have to end this one. You're trying to keep this person on the hook because you don't want to lose them. It is not advisable. It really isn't. You save yourself so much trauma, so much confusion. And it's interesting because my Instagram presence, I have gotten so many messages from people who say, thank you, because I was like on the slippery slope towards an affair. And because I saw you talk so candidly about what happens in them, I pivoted and I went home and I started having conversations I'd been avoiding with my spouse, or I stopped what I was doing and I realized what I was about to get into. And I'm like, that's everything.
That's incredible.
What do you tell the affair couple when they come see you afterwards? I mean, because there are those that they have affairs and they end up together. They try to make it work. I mean, what do you do in that type of scenario?
And it runs the gamut. I think that it depends. If there's a lot of damage in the affair relationship that needs to be addressed, both people need to assess their relationship to honesty. Both people need to be doing their own work, and they really need to be committed to co-creating something together that is not a version of what they previously had or the version of themselves they brought into their previous relationship. And that's a commitment, but that's really the road forward. You are now beginning a new relationship. The affair was one relationship. Now you have another one in the light of day. And how are we going to build this? Right. And not everyone can do it. But some people can't. For some people, it really is like a pure love connection, a nervous system recognition. And they really do go on to forge a life together. That is a relationship that they could not have achieved with the original spouse that they were with. And then other people thought that they were trading in their past partner for, you know, a new one without problems, and they're not equipped to do the work, and they're not equipped to go to the mat when things get hard, and they just bring themselves back into it And then when things don't look or feel as good, they're like, wasn't this supposed to be better? Where's the return, you know, receipt for this?
Well, yeah, because one of the draws on affairs is your ability to put reality aside and live in this fantasy of it's great because you don't have to deal with the real world responsibilities. You don't have to deal with getting the kids to school on time. You don't have to deal with what happens when one kid wakes up thrown up at 3 a.m., right? Or you don't have to deal with the chronic surgeries that your spouse may be having. I mean, it's an escape. It's an escape from reality for a short period of time. And then some think, and I think it's the people that are on not the married side, but the one that's the affair partner, they think, oh, it's going to be great. And the reality is it's until you're actually in the reality of a relationship that's not behind closed doors, you don't know if you're compatible or not because you're compatible in a fantasy.
Yeah. You don't really know each other. It takes a lifetime and you still don't know your spouse, right? Like we don't even know ourselves. We're spending a lifetime getting to know ourselves. We think we can know another person. That takes time. It takes work. It takes a commitment to honesty and constant honesty and the ability to have tolerance for discomfort. And
yeah, well, that's not most of the population.
No.
I mean, it's just not. Are you able to identify like red flags for people that are saying, hey, these are behaviors or patterns of behavior that can lead to affairs? Like, oh, do you see those warning flags and what are they that you see?
Yeah, I think it's a few broad things can be the low-hanging fruit, but there's opportunity, the relationship to honesty and transparency, and communication within the couple. So the way I would say that is people are more vulnerable when they have more opportunities. So when you're in a job that does shift work or that travels a lot, not only is there perhaps more loneliness, but sometimes there are environments that can turn a blind eye in a little bit of a way that is supportive of just knowing that that might happen in that space. I've even worked with people whose workplaces almost encourage that kind of, there's a conference and everyone's got a hotel room. And so these are opportunistic, situational contributing factors, but you have to stay aware of your opportunity, right? So if I am married and I'm sitting at a bar on a Friday night and I do that every Friday because my husband's not home yet, I have to know that that's putting me in a vulnerable position and I am responsible for my guard being up. So you really have to be assessing opportunity, to say the least, about that, because without opportunity, it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, right?
Yeah. Then there's the relationship to honesty and transparency in any relationship. And that's something you have to hold inside of yourself. But essentially, the question becomes, if my spouse or partner were to see what I was doing or read what I was typing or reading coming into me, would there be any kind of problem with it? And if the answer is yes, then you know you're kind of sliding into some slippery slope.
Are there careers that you found, Lauren? Because I can tell you through my conversations, I've found careers that are most likely to have opportunities to set up the potential for an affair. And when I mean this, it's not somebody who's saying, I'm going to get in this career so I can have an affair. It's that you have long hours. You have the inability to communicate. You have exciting or traumatic events. I have three sectors people come to me, but I would love to hear your perspective and then I'll share what I have.
Yeah, I'm dying to hear this because I have my thoughts on this as well.
Yeah. And it comes with a giant asterisk because obviously all of us know people in these career paths who are extraordinarily faithful people. And so I really hesitate on that, but it's sort of like what we were talking about before. Anything with trauma, shift work, a combination of trauma and shift work and or large amounts of travel. And so we see consultants, CEOs, we see firefighters, police officers, and physicians, nurses. There's long hours at the hospital. It's only you can understand what I'm really going through. So there's that trauma bonding piece. And there's also the opportunity to hide it easier because all you have to do is tell your spouse that you're on another shift or your schedule got changed. And they are so used to accepting that and supporting you that it's like, oh, got to get another flight, right? If I'm a consultant or a CEO or whatever, you know, business calls, of course, you know, it's literally my role as your betrayed spouse to support you in that. And I am used to doing that. And likewise with folks who do a lot of shift work and shift work that has trauma entailed, same thing, right? We are very well poised to accept whatever comes your way in terms of work and support that. And meanwhile, you are experiencing very traumatic situations, long hours, exhaustion, and a lot of bonding in that time that has nothing to do with us. So those can be very vulnerable jobs to have. I will say that.
You're so like politically correct, because I'll call a spade a spade. Law enforcement are some of the biggest cheaters that I find. And that's not to say, like you said, that there are good in every profession. There are bad in every profession. Yeah. But I find law enforcement in particular has very high rates of adultery.
Well, let's talk about ego as well. And that's why oftentimes folks in the medical, folks in high up in business, folks who are in law. And again, I really want to be cautious, but the intersection of personal ego and the effect that you have on a business, on civilization, on other people, on society can really creep in to your sense of entitlement and your willingness to take an opportunity. So I think it's not, we have to be cautious about saying it's this person, that career or that. It's also little underlying factors that contribute to shifts in what a person is open to.
To flip the tables on us, everyone on this session right now is in a career or in a, let's say, has certain boundaries or has certain capabilities to conduct an affair. And I'll tell you why. Through your coaching business, you travel, right? You consult with clients, everything else like that. I, working in entertainment, there's a lot of opportunities for different events, different shows, what you call a showmance, right? In terms of you have this high intensity moment where you bond together. There's the thrill of getting something done, everything else. And Michelle, you as a lawyer, you talk about billable hours, you talk about all these things. I'm working on a case, I'm working late. So I wanted to throw that out there because you'll find professions, ultimately, these are the three professions that I'm talking about right now, because Lauren, I'm going to put you sort of adjacent to the medical field in a way, in terms of helping, in terms of healing, in terms of that sort of aspect. But that's a real thing, because I've noticed this even in the dating world, that if you date somebody outside of a certain profession, they don't quite understand it. And depending upon their own insecurities, you may have some pretty severe problems when it comes to them understanding what you do, even if obviously you're not a cheater. But these are things that I would love to know how you navigate through when people are dating, not the 9 to 5, but somebody who is, you know, basically 24/7 could be on call.
Yeah, it comes down to we are responsible for ourselves. And so above all, there is no guarantee that someone's ever going to be faithful, whether they're in the same career, different career, shift work, no shift work. It is up to us as individuals to be our own measure of whether we are creeping our own boundaries or creeping towards something or having an interest. I'll use this as an example. My husband had been having his affair for quite some time already, and I was feeling very much like a single parent at home. I didn't know why I felt that way. I felt very neglected, very alone. And yet I believed it was for his career, so I continued to support it. And, you know, essentially, I was truly lonely in my marriage. We moved to a new town. I ran into a guy who worked at a local store, and his eyes just twinkled, right? And I felt something I hadn't felt in a really long time. And I found myself fantasizing about that guy. And it was my wake-up call to say, whoa, I'm over here, you know, raising our little baby, supporting my husband's career, working two jobs at the same time, setting up our life in a new town. I'm lonely in my marriage, and that's why I felt that way. What did I do with that? I turned around, I sat my husband down, and I said, we have a problem. I don't know what it is, but we have a problem. And so instead of following my interest, I noticed it as a crisis moment, and I flipped it into the marriage. And you also have to be very careful about relationships and connections with members of the opposite sex. Now, I do believe that men and women can be friends. One of my deepest friendships is a 25-year friendship with a man, right? Whose wife I helped pick out the wedding dress. And, you know, he's been my closest friend since day one of high school, right? Now, you just have to know where you stand in that. And oftentimes when it's like a new friendship, right? This isn't something that's stood the test of time and no one's ever thought of each other that way. It's like brother and sister. But now they're calling you because they're sharing how they feel about their relationship with you. That is like the number one red flag when you are sharing your marital or relational issues with a member of the opposite sex. It's literally saying, I am vulnerable. I am not happy in this relationship. And I am also emotionally investing in you as the holder of that and my confidant instead of my spouse. And that immediately creates another direction.
But that's where emotional cheating comes in, because sometimes, in my opinion, and I've talked about this on this as well as on Instagram, but it's emotional affairs, and I think, are sometimes so much more devastating than the actual physical.
When it comes to communication with a spouse or a significant other, Lauren, do you find that people come into relationships and let's say they have certain possessive qualities, let's say they have this tendency based on insecurity or maybe some trauma in the past that they have to do things like, I want to see your phone, I want to have access to this, and we know what path this goes down. But the reason I say this is that sometimes people, they get into relationships and they're like, well, my significant other was traumatized, so she likes to read my phone, I have no problem. But then all of a sudden they pull back from that. They realize that they're basically in a position where they're being controlled. And then all of a sudden the other spouse starts to get insecure about that and starts to lead into the path of thinking they're having an affair.
Yeah. Well, you use the word control, and that's everything. So much of this is about control. So if you have trust issues and those show up in your new relationship and you're acting out on them, that's all about control, right? I can control what I can see. I can control what I know, but what I don't know, what I don't see can hurt me. And relationships are risk. Relationships are about faith and belief in the other person, but we don't want to be hurt. I mean, it's devastating. And so ultimately, when you don't trust another person, that can also become a self-fulfilling prophecy in which the other person feels so doubted. So like, do you really think that little of me that you have to police me like this? They're like, I've worked with people who honestly, they become unfaithful because they're like, they think I was doing it anyway.
So
like,
why
am I being such a upstanding person? And obviously it's not like causal, but it erodes that person's sense of connection in the relationship because trust is the basis of connection.
I mean, if you are having your spouse follow your location, you have to submit your phone or tender your phone, I will put, for the spouse to go through it. When you get to that point in a relationship, and an affair may not have happened at that point, right? Like, but you are consistently on, and I'm just going to be blunt, on your spouse's ass about cheating. Like, where are you going? What are you doing? Who are you with? I need to know your time, location, what you ate, the time you pooped. Like, if you have to, like, recount back your day, and it's over and over and over again, and then there's never a let up. And I'm talking from my own personal experience. Like, I remember with my ex-husband, I had worked all day because I was a part-time judge for a local city around here. I have a full-time law practice, and I was a mom. And I was in judging that particular day, and we had a full docket, full day. And I came home to pick him up because we're going to go to a concert. We're going to go to a comedy show because I love stand-up comedy. And the entire drive from my house to the venue was a Spanish inquisition of every minute of my day. And this was not a one-off. And it was at that moment where I realized that this is never going to change, ever. And it was one of the reasons I ended up divorced. I'm like, because, and it wasn't to go cheat or whatever else. That's a whole other discussion on our relationship. But it was never letting up. And that will drive someone to go cheat. And it really will, because you just get so fed up with the Spanish Inquisition. It's like, I'm out. I'm done. Now, what you should do, and was what I ended up doing, was you divorce your spouse. That being said, I'll just never forget that. And I know that that what I experienced is not a one-off. And I don't know that it's women in particular that do it, but at least on my cases, that's what I see. It's, oh, I found it on his phone, or I found it on his iWatch, or I found it. I mean, I can't tell you how many screenshots I get of iWatch messages coming through. Or like you get, oh, best example, Jake, I've talked about this with you. My ex would go through my phone. He'd go through my iPad, all without me knowing. And then he would screenshot pictures as evidence of whatever it was that he thought was going on. He was almost always wrong. But I had a particular female attorney that said, love you, miss you, let me know we can hang out. And I was like, love you, miss you too. Female, family law attorney, like, that's just normal. And he assumed, because for whatever reason on my iPad, it was just her number, not her name, that that was proof of an affair. And I was like, and there was a huge blowout over it that I spent like 3 days trying to prove to him that it's my female friend. This is looking on the contact, just didn't save. I had to go to a condo complex on a Saturday to go show my ex-husband that, in fact, I wasn't visiting someone at the condo complex because for whatever reason, the clip on my phone kept pinging when I would drive by that apartment complex or condo complex on my way to the office. And so he just assumed that I was sleeping with someone there. And I was like, I've never even been in this complex, but I had to spend a Saturday going to validate what was going on when it was nothing.
That's paranoia, right? So like a difference between severe paranoia that where you're treating someone like a criminal and then they become a criminal or they leave
or they just say, I'm out.
Not become a criminal versus needing reassurance, right? And every healthy relationship needs reassurance from time to time, but also they just need reassurance in general. So I think it's really, you know, it's different, right? I've been so deeply betrayed, but I would never go through why am I going through your phone? Why am I believing this about you? Because if I believe this about you, I shouldn't be with you. Like, that's a problem, right? But okay, I had to go home and take care of my daughter and you stayed at the party. Do I believe you would do something? No, I don't. But my past trauma just came up for me because that felt really familiar in my body. And now I just need to hear you say that you were talking to Joe Smith for a while and then you went home and went to bed. Like, I just needed to hear you say that.
Right.
And thank you for like sitting with me through my irrational fear. I know you didn't do anything, but I was having some trauma come up for me. That's healthy and normal, right? Not like incriminating someone cause.
And there are relationships that are like that. It is,
absolutely.
What's this message? What's this message? What's this message? And without basis, but those are some of the ones that, and I hate to say it, but force someone to say, fuck it, for lack of a better word. I mean, and it sounds terrible, but just the realities of being in relationship.
Are there people that you find in your practice that come to you that you're like, I just can't work with this person, or they just don't understand the components of what a healthy relationship is, and I'm just not going to get to them?
Oh, yes. I'm happy to report that that is a very small segment of the population I work with, which reinforces the idea that not all people having affairs are sociopaths and narcissists. Like 98% are lovely, good people who got themselves in a bad situations, made bad choices, and now need to get themselves out of it, right? 2%. It's that personality issue. It's the narcissist. It's the grandiose, malignant narcissist that I feel it in my bones the first 10 minutes of our conversation. And I know immediately that because there's an inability to consider a perspective that isn't only their own, and that the fragility to this person makes it so that they cannot allow themselves to be penetrable to empathy or insight or self-awareness or self-responsibility, there is no getting anywhere. And it's only a matter of time until I turn into the enemy. And I do my best to ride that line and really try to help. Just coming from a no harm perspective, there's always work that can be done, but I know that I'm on borrowed time and I know it's only a matter of time before that person will leave because they can't withstand the discomfort of self-awareness and self-responsibility.
Jake, anything else?
Well, we could talk to Lauren all day, but as I know through billable hours, Michelle, this will cost us eventually between both of you. I don't know what the tab would be on this.
It's huge.
But I can imagine. No, I shouldn't even be here. I feel out of my league as I am. That being said, though, I do have one final question. I'll just try to pack it all into one. What's the number one reason that you see regarding why people have affairs in your business?
People feel seen and appreciated by somebody new. And that, in my experience, has a life of its own.
Yeah.
But there is no like one reason, but it's truly feeling seen for who you are for maybe the first time ever, if not in a long time. And that's very powerful to feel witnessed.
It's interesting between both your career, Lauren, and Michelle's career is how intertwined they are because, you know, one of you gets them coming, one of you gets them going and vice versa in a way, right? Somebody could go to you, Lauren, and then all of a sudden, well, we can't go any further. Michelle's on the case. And then Michelle has somebody who's gone through this, who needs help and healing and trying to form a healthy future relationship, trying to get through the trauma of an extramarital affair or something like that. So I think there's a very high level of potential connectivity here, which I think is a fascinating conversation, but it's something to sort of look at in the multi-steps you take when you're trying to heal from something like this.
Oh my God, absolutely. We're on this, you know, opposite and the same sides of the same coin in so many ways. We just take different roles and approaches in that. But, you know, at the end of the day, relationships are complex. Life is complex. People are complex. And, you know, we end up seeing that in all of its facets. Michelle sees certain parts, I see other parts, and we're there to help people forward. It's just, it's not pretty, right?
We both see the underbelly in different ways.
Yeah.
And we see the underbelly that most people do not get to see.
It's so true. The rest of the population is usually dealing with cultural norms and things they've heard. And the way that society presents these things, not the real boots on the ground truth of them. And what I love about the work I do is getting to be boots on the ground with people and see them for the human they are and help them use that to their strength and advantage to navigate a really, really difficult situation that otherwise they would have. We're not born knowing how to deal with these things. And now we need to get ourselves out of them or navigate through something we didn't choose in our life and our relationship. This is where resilience comes in and is born. And we need to help people harness that and find a way through and forward. And so I think we're on the good end of things. And I think it's amazing what we are able to do with people who are in difficult situations.
I like to see people get to the other side of it to find healing. Because, and I refer, I'm like, go see a therapist. I'm like, while we're doing this, I mean, it's okay to go see someone to go get help. Because the last thing you want to do is carry that bitterness with you, because that will go with you the rest of your life and just make things miserable. There is healing after an affair. There is life after an affair. And I think there are relationships, good ones, after an affair. And I think it just takes someone getting down to the nitty gritty to figure it out, figure themselves out and figure out how to not either engage in that again or to look for the warning signs to see when it may be happening again. But, you know, education is key. And I think that's one of the things I love about what we just did was that this is going to educate more people.
Absolutely. And yeah. That's where the power is. That's where the power of choice is. Even if you're already in an affair, even if you've been betrayed, to know that there's people talking about it, frankly, gives you a path forward. It gives you hope. It gives you something to hold on to that you didn't have before, which is why I think it's so important to talk about these things that just stay hidden. It's so important. And obviously, it's not for the faint of heart. Someone's got to sort of raise their hand and do it, but it's happening. And what are we doing if we're not, you know, dealing with it and helping people? So, yeah, I think it's, you know, it's really important work. And I'm really grateful we had this conversation.
I am forever grateful that you responded to my email and said, yes, would love to.
Because most people don't. Nobody ever responds to Michelle. As you can see, nobody wants any dealings with her. You know that.
But it's funny because we put the list together of who we want to talk to. And quite frankly, you are the top of my list. I was like, I want Lauren on the show because I love her content. For so many reasons, I love your content. But yeah, so thank you again for spending part of your day with us. Where can everyone find you?
Yes. So my website's laurenlarusso.com. And on Instagram, I'm at Lauren LaRusso. I also have this book called Beyond Infidelity, which came out in January. And I would say that while it's written for betrayed spouses who are seeking to recover from the crisis and turn into their best, wisest, most evolved self because of what happened, it also is a really important read for anybody on any side of an affair, because it gives that empathy without judgment that is so lacking. So it's like this, you know, Pandora's box of understanding about what really happens when infidelity has entered the chat. And so I would say to anyone listening, pick up that book and you're just going to really expand your understanding. And thank you for having me. Thank you so much for this conversation.
It's been enlightening, illuminating, and I'm forever appreciative of the knowledge you have shared today.
Anytime. Always happy.
Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Love, Lust, Law. If you want to reach out, you can find more about what's going on with me or with Jake. You can reach out and follow me on Instagram at Attorney Michelle Locke. You can also email me at hello@michellelocke.com. Just remember, Michelle is spelled with one L, and you can thank my mother, Margot, for that. Thank you all so much for listening.